Hello, and welcome to the Midlife Pilot Podcast. This is still a podcast all about aviation and all things flying in midlife. And we're glad you could join us for episode 50. This is special. I'm glad to be back. My name, for those of you who may not know me, is Chris Moran, the OG midlife pilot on YouTube. And I'm excited to be back for episode 50. This is super exciting, and I appreciate the chance to be here. I'm joined by more co-hosts than I've ever had from the time of the podcast, including from the rainy, rainy northwest corner of these great United States. It's Fly Sport Tedder joining tonight. And, of course, the OG Midlife Pilot podcast co-host from deep inside the heart of Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee, airplane owner, musician, filmmaker, all around good dude, and now White Claw aficionado, Brian Siskind. And good evening, friends.
Oh gosh, that just nuked all of the prior superlatives that came before it. My friend who left these with me is an Airbus driver. Maybe this is an Airbus thing that people drink White Claws. I don't know, but yes, thank you. Welcome back, Chris, man. This is I don't know. It's kind of like feels right, you know, like a holiday time kind of family reunion kind of vibe.
It does. I'm excited to be back. It was very nice to get the invitation. I have missed hanging out with everybody, and I'm looking forward to catching up and seeing what everybody's into and talking about stuff tonight.
We're good, man. I just want to specify also for folks, Ben is around. He may actually join. The sage may grace us with his presence. He had originally thought that he was going to be fully unavailable for this recording. And then, so we made sure to get you on the show to run the thing. And then, and now he's sitting there watching us somewhere, wondering if he should just sit back with his whiskey and just watch it all go down in flames.
I'm going to guarantee you he's not drinking a White Claw. I'm just gonna absolutely guarantee you that as a fact. He may never speak to you again, frankly.
I may not speak to myself. This is fully embarrassing. I don't know. Yeah, my wife and I, we just pulled this thing out. We're like, we have like 12 of them or whatever. And I'm like, well, if it's bad, we'll just pour them all out.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, it's not terrible. I don't know. So anyway, here's where we are. So Ben is as much central to the show as anything else. He may pop in. I just didn't want people to be confused when they saw you. It's sort of like you would almost think if you were a cursory listener or observer of this show, you might think that the main host is sort of they're basically like each handling their own parole situations, you know, or like sort of house arrest or whatever it is. Right. Sort of it's like whoever's free. So, yeah.
That's groovy. That's groovy.
Well, we need a good intro for you, Chris. So I did a load of work, which was you began your training in 2018. So you've been flying for 5 years.
Yep.
You're from, and see, this is the Music Row thing. You're from Coal Country and Mary Lou Retton's hometown.
That's right.
Vermont, West Virginia.
That's right.
Have to come up with some regional things for you.
I can assure you. I appreciate it. There's very few things. Yeah. So like we're known for here. Mary Lou Retton's hometown. Also Nick Saban, actually, if you wanted another celebrity to throw in there. And of a delicacy not known far outside of Appalachia, the pepperoni roll. Which I don't know if I brought it to Brian. We've talked about them for sure. Like pepperoni and cheese baked inside of bread. It's a very common thing here, and it's a huge, huge part of the food culture of Appalachia. Coal mining stuff's taking the mines with you. So it's
like a hand pie from England, but
Shelves, you know, it doesn't go bad super quick and carried around with you, and yeah, it's good stuff.
If the bread wasn't really flaky, it would work well in a plane.
Oh, I've eaten pepperoni rolls in a plane many times.
Sweet.
Yeah.
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 Is that why your yolk is so shiny?
Exactly. The grease. And occasionally there's a little on the side of my face from the pepperoni. Yeah.
You get that call flight following and you're like, woof, woof.
Yeah. Well, so we do have a couple of surprises for you, Chris, but we're going to save those and keep everybody on the hook for what we're going to put you through. But but in the meantime, I think one of the reasons, obviously, we just like hanging out and we've missed you. I mean, we still talk all the time, but it's like it's not quite the same, you know, meeting all, you know, up in this way. So we've missed you, but, you know, you clarified when you kind of quote unquote left that you had a bunch of other things you were doing and just, you just felt like I've got to let some things go. My time is, really full with a lot of other things and a lot of endeavors outside of the world of aviation. And, you know, while that doesn't make any sense to me really, while I totally understand all that, now that it's been some time, I'm really interested to sort of pull you back into the fray and just sort of take stock and kind of go, okay, where have you been with it and where is it going and how is aviation sitting with you? Because I think a lot of us have a way of burdening ourselves with the responsibility in a way that is good, but also can be perhaps unhealthy. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's good to take a break from things, and not feel bad about it. But at the same time, you have to understand what the impacts of that, time away might be. So yeah. I'm really interested in your perspectives of where you've been and then what's been happening lately as far as you and life and aviation.
Sure. Well, I can give you a Cliff Notes version. Not a lot had really changed. It was more making space, just giving myself some margins of things. So it wasn't just the podcast. You know, I did some other things. Like I served as president of the airport authority here at Four Golf Seven in Fairmont for the prior year. And I've elected not to take an officer position for the upcoming year. I'm staying on the board, but I have kind of pulled back from that to make a little space. The things that have kept me busy have really been work things. I've been working again on a consulting basis with a company I worked for 25 years before I left 2.5 years ago, helping out with some project management and some stuff for them kind of on the side. And that took up a little bit of space. And truthfully, the flying club continues to be something that I have elected to not kind of pull back from. It's really the favorite thing that I do as it relates to aviation. This thing has grown now. We're at 40 members and 3 airplanes. It's a beast of a thing. And we have a really, really solid group of people who run that along with me. And that takes up a considerable amount of time. In terms of the flying component, you'll appreciate this because I know you have been flying like an insane human being. I have 7/10 of an hour in the last 30 days, 1.6 hours in the last 90 days, and 14 hours in the last 12 months total time.
Wow.
So that is the limited factor, including Sunday. I told Brian this story on the phone on Sunday afternoon. I flew the plane I trained in that was most of my video content was the 172, November 385 to Lima. I flew it for the first time on Sunday morning in about a year. And I just went to Clarksburg to do some patterns. And on my way in, there was a Fairmont State University. They have an aviation program there. And one of their training 172s was holding short, waiting for my arrival. And my very first landing in that thing was not only flat, but was effectively nose wheel first. So I rode that thing out for about 4 landings. And while, of course, I was, you know, safety was my first priority. My second top of mind point was like, well, good. I'm glad I got to put on that display for this lucky student this morning who got to witness this on a beautiful Sunday morning. So I proceeded to improve those over the subsequent few laps in the pattern there at Clarksburg. But, you know, it's funny. You're definitely not immune. No one is immune to like the rust that happens from not doing things all the time. And so I was very aware of that, super aware of that after my first landing. It was good to get back in. I had a good time. And I'm trying to get back into even just short. I told somebody yesterday, you know, you I don't need to practice a bunch of cross countries because I can program my GPS and lean the mixture and deal with communications and like navigate to a place. What I need to work on are the skills, you know, that are getting rusty related around the thing. So I'm making a conscious effort here to try to get up at least once a week for the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks before hopefully getting to go on a trip here in the early part of the new year.
Man. So, and one of the things that you said too, that was, I thought kind of interesting was you had mentioned that, and you, the way you kind of said it to me was, of course, when I was doing these landings, of course I was apprehensive about being too slow. So you were sort of hearkening back to kind of the, earliest tendencies that you had in your training, which I find to be really interesting. I mean, obviously you recognized it, but, and it totally makes sense. It's like, if I'm going to be anything, I'm not going to be slow, you know? But it's a fine line, right? So,
Too fast, you know, it's easy to think that like too slow is the worst thing, which I guess technically, I mean, you definitely don't want to be, but, too much speed is, even though you have an 8,000 foot runway, that's what leads to things like being able to land the plane 4 times. You know, you land and take off, you just have all that excess energy, and it's a lot of things can go sideways on you in that case too. So that is exactly what I was thinking the next couple laps was like, all right, let's, you know, this plane is going to fly like with flaps. And I mean, yeah, you got airspeed for days. So like, let's get the speeds nailed, and things worked out much better. In fact, my landing back at little teeny Fairmont, when I came back here, was the best one of the 4 or 5 that I did. It was perfect. And you know, I finally got everything dialed in, but it was, no one's immune. It's, you gotta respect it. Like, you know, I never felt unsafe, you know, and I told you, Brian, I've had several, it's not just the time factor. I mean, I have had some just general struggles with, specifically at Fairmont, like my and Mr. McSpadden's accident really has weighed on me a lot, more I think than a lot of them have. Fairmont is a really short runway with really no options on either end for a loss of thrust on takeoff situation. And so that's the real hesitancy. It takes everything I have when I get out here on the runway and to make myself say like, I'm gonna take off now. Like I have to do it against everything in me. But then the moment I'm up and away and, you know, altitude it could get somewhere, I love every minute of it. And I have there's no more trepidation of anything, even the bad land, squirrely landings, you know, it's like, that's, I've done enough of those hundreds of, I mean, you know, those are fine. I just have a real mental kind of, struggle with the, like, what am I going to do in the case of, I mean, there's, when I say there's nowhere to go, I mean, it's challenging here. So,
well, it's good to be mindful of those things, even if, you know, you still have to come up with whatever the best worst option is. And I'm sure that you've done that. Maybe you've got a wetsuit in the back or something. I don't know, but, but yeah, you know, Ted, I don't know if you've been paying attention, Chris, but Ted's been flying an insane amount in most beautiful places in his CTLS. He just figured out how to land the other day.
No, I was, true? I think I was about 100 hours in and I finally got my CFI in the plane and I'm like, I can't figure this out. Like, you know, it's not descending, you know, everybody says landed at 55 and does a little bit like, oh, landed at 65 and point the nose down. It's like, I'm sitting there trying to slow it down and it's just kind of floating and mushing down. And I kept trying to slow it down further and further. And it's like, no, go a little faster and point down. And, but yeah, it took me, I mean, literally it was around 100 hours into the plane and yeah, I was struggling.
Yeah.
That's well, cool. I've, according to Chris, it's about nose wheel first. So maybe you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Do not recommend.
Yeah, I did go to a 1860 foot runway over the weekend. It's at the coast, and I've been there once before. This is the first time from this direction in the pattern, and there's a hillside too close to fly a proper downwind, and then if you turn right where you turn from base to final, there's a hill right there. So I was like, okay, I'm going to like make this downwind that goes 45 degrees out, turn 90 or turn 180 there and come, you know, make this dog leg into the runway. And I did. And I was really worried that it was short and everything else. And so of course I just like smacked it in, like, you know, trying to get it a nice, you know, short landing. And of course, you know, not the prettiest, but it's 1800 feet. So
the places you're flying, Ted, are so outrageous. It's just incredible to see. If anybody's not familiar with Ted's YouTube channel, go and watch his videos. It's FlySport.
FlySport Tedder.
Yeah. Yes. Ted's finally like, now I'm in the show notes.
Is that a Hank and John Green reference?
Yes.
Link down the doobly doo.
Yeah.
I like it. I appreciate that.
Brian had no idea. Yeah.
I know. I'm a huge Green Brothers fan. Yeah. So here's something interesting, you guys. You might find interesting. This little airport here, Four Golf 7, we got about, I don't know, 40 planes, give or take, hangared here. It's a pretty small field. I got a message in our Flying Club Slack channel over the weekend and a picture of 5-2 Lima sitting on the ramp being ramp checked by two FAA agents. And I was like, I gave it the like big eyes emoji and then immediately got in my car to come up here and see what was happening. The guys were gone before I got here, but I got the full scoop. It was indeed just a random visit at the airfield, and they had had a chance to look at one or two planes before 5-2 Lima came back from its train. It was a training flight. It had one, a club an instructor and a club member student training in it. And I asked the guys, I said, what all did they do? I mean, how did it go? What all did they ask you? You know, these kind of things. And they said, well, the first thing the guys told him, which I thought was super cool, they said to the guys when they got out, said, who's the student? You know, and the student, this is a pre-solo student, you know, kind of raised his hand. And the guy said, we've been listening to you. We have a speaker that's tuned to a CTEF radio outside. And the guy said, I just wanted to commend you on your excellent radio work. And we've been listening to you for the last 3 or 4 patterns. You know, you did a really nice job. And so there's like, oh, well, thank
then
you.
He faints. Yeah.
Well, yeah. He was like, well, thank you. And the student tells me, he goes, he's like, I asked the instructor, I was like, do you just want me to go over here and be quiet? And the instructor was like, yeah, they're going to talk to me, because they wanted to check. They were going to talk to the instructor. And so they asked for the normal things, like the aircraft documentation that you have to have on board. And then they checked the instructor's, all of his documents that he had, and everybody had everything with them, and they did a walk around of the aircraft. In fact, I didn't realize how much they really did or can do, but they were, the picture I got, they were like, they had the elevator, they were, you know, looking at the flight control surfaces. I mean, they were, you know, checking out the airplane. Oh yeah, there it is. Yeah. Yeah, awesome picture for those of you on the stream. So they were checking out the airplane, and they basically said, you know, great job, you guys. Everything looks perfect. And about, you know, 10 minutes after the encounter started, they went on their way, and everything was good. But I asked a guy who's been on the airport authority board here for, 30 or 40 years. I'm like, have you? And he told me, he said, I don't recall a single time in the history that I've been here hearing a story of a ramp check at our airport. It's very unusual here at the small airfield, but everything was good. It was the first kind of experience for the club. It was the first time that I'm aware of that any of our club aircraft have been ramp checked. And I thought it was cool that they took time to mention to the student, like, you know, good job on your radio stuff. So it was
experience. You know, who's the student that was making those, you know, mediocre radio calls? I was like, sir, I've got hundreds of hours. Yeah.
Exactly. So that was kind of wild. That was on Monday or yesterday. That was the first one.
Yeah,
one dull geek is saying in the chat regarding ramp checks that our sort of community seems to have a larger than average number of ramp checks. You know, maybe there's a reason for that. And, you know, maybe you should think about posting anything in the chat to say that you're actually aware of this.
Yeah.
What's his home airport again? It is a little bit uncanny, but I mean, I'm glad, I think it's a great thing. I, I, I know that people are a little sour on it or feel like it's the man, you know, or whatever, but man, I'm so glad because, and to hear that they're going to, you know, smaller airports where maybe things are a little bit, you know, looser and, you know, checking on things and all that. So,
well, one other thing, I mean, we're pretty serious. The club, we take it all pretty seriously. I mean, they're not going to find, they'd be hard pressed to find anything out of order. I mean, it's when the thing you realize is that it's much easier as an individual airplane owner to get lax on some of these things. Like when you have the responsibility of, you know, 40 different people flying these planes and like any of them could be checked anywhere they are for anything, it's kind of you feel a little bit of a burden to make sure that, you know, beyond the safety reasons, you know, just to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed all the time. And we're pretty meticulous about paperwork and just keeping things in order and knowing where everything is all the time. And it paid off. I mean, it was a successful check. They did tell the guys, they're like, before you got here, we had a couple of guys in the 150 that did not have their documentation with them. And so I don't know what the outcome of that is, but there were people other than us who didn't have quite as good a day.
It's not like the cops, where they, I mean, they can't like commandeer your plane and fly it to some impound, right? Like,
right.
But, or maybe they do. And I just don't know that that's how it works. Maybe there's some secret place.
They put a boot on it, you know, like a parking boot. There's a big, like, out on the ramp with like a big yellow boot on the tire.
Yeah. And yeah, just some annoyingly adhesive sticker that's just sunbaked on the on the windscreen that's just going to never come off.
Yeah. Well, instead of a boot, it's like a big, like, lift deterrent device they put over the wing to, like, keep it from being able to generate any lift.
So if you want to find Brian's plane or my plane, yeah, we're actually in North Carolina and we both fly Pipers. You know.
Yeah. So one dual geek's saying he's telling the FAA that's watching that he's at the airports that I fly out of. Yeah. Now, Chris, even though you have been perhaps not consuming as much aviation content and maybe, you know, certainly not making the content that you used to make. Which, by the way, we all miss greatly, and we're tired of bugging you about it. We're just going to try the opposite approach of just sort of pretending like it doesn't bother us, and then maybe we'll bring it back. But
once I do something interesting, you know, like once I have some interesting flight to share, I'll make sure to do it. But I can assure you, nobody wanted to see the flight that I had on Sunday morning. Like, there is no benefit. No one would have wanted to see that.
So. You're totally wrong. That would have been absolute gold. It's like, you know, midlife pilot loses it. But I guess what I was going to ask is, in the times that you do watch anything, don't you still have opinions about stuff that are from the most knowledgeable part of your proficiency, the highest level of your proficiency? And here's an example. It's like, I haven't really played, all I did was play drums for years and years and years and years and years. I haven't played drums in, I don't know, 7 years. Mm-hmm. It was a huge part of my life. And then I just didn't do that anymore. However, even though I've let every available thing of my drumming probably atrophy to the point of non-existence, if I'm listening to something or I'm watching something, I still judge it. And I don't mean like judge it like in a negative way, maybe a little bit, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I still critically interpret it, I guess is a better way to put it, from the standpoint of I'm still, you know, it's kind of like in midlife, right? We still have those moments where you jump for something or you do some sort of, you know, like you have these little blips where you forget that you're not 23 anymore.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm just wondering, when you're consuming aviation content and still kind of lurking around all of this, if you're not still looking at it through the lens of absolute proficiency, and then maybe after this last flight, you're like, I need to just, I don't know. But I just find that to be an interesting point of view.
Oh yeah. No, I certainly still consume plenty of YouTube content around aviation. I mean, I haven't stopped watching or following what's going on and, you know, keeping up with what all of everybody's producing and the stuff that is out there. And so moreover, these days, it's less about the flying, because the people that I'm watching, I generally don't have any, I'm, there's nothing for me to judge of their aviation. I mean, that's not the part that is,
right?
You know, that's all very good of the people that I'm consuming primarily. I really am watching the what people are creating from the creative part of it now more than anything else. It wasn't the case when I started my training. All I wanted was inside the plane. Like, I just wanted as much of that as I could get. And now I'm more interested in the people who are doing things that are unique and interesting. And to me, still to this day, I mean, SoCal Flying Monkey is, I think,
oh yeah,
doing some of the greatest content that is out there in the aviation world. And of course, I was really sad to miss, you guys were kind enough to invite me to be on the episode with Josh Flowers. And I had a conflict and I couldn't be there. And I was really sad about that, because I still think that he, you know, I have enjoyed everything he's ever done. I've only had the chance that I've had probably 10 minutes of collective conversation with him over the years, and they've all been in crazy at Oshkosh and just in crazy environment. So I really was disappointed to miss the chance to spend an hour just kind of talking to him, because I have a ton of respect for his, the way he uses his channel and his platform. But yeah, no, I mean, I definitely still watch, and I definitely still have people that I don't watch intentionally. that's one thing that hasn't changed and will never change. But you know,
I'm right here, Chris.
Yeah, no, it is definitely not your stuff, Ted. I'm definitely still engaged in that and following what everybody's doing. And there's just a ton of people making really, really good stuff.
Ted's channel is very controversial.
Yeah.
It's really kind of,
I'm going for the clicks. Yeah.
It does almost seem like it, right? Like it seems like you're in the business of conflict more than even aviation, Ted.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And for you to come up with this whole thing of, what did you call it? You gave this whole lecture on your channel about, Ted MMS or something.
I see where you're going. You're not gonna bait me into it.
By the way, Ted has no lectures on his channel. Ted, you make the stuff that's like what Chris and I too, you know, when you're starting, it's just, I just want to have as immersive of a real, you know, kind of experience, you know, just like, what is it like to be in a plane and what's going on, you know? So,
yeah.
So that's really cool.
It's like, Chris's early stuff and a lot of ours, which is security camera footage, right? Like,
yeah.
Camera looking forward. There's a lot to gain. It's great, but it's, you know, you kind of move to smarter filming, trying to get closer to having a touch of art like Brian's.
Yep.
Chris, did you hear Josh talking about his most popular video?
I did not.
It's in the podcast that we did with him. He was talking about just the irony of, right, like you craft, you know, you work so hard on an incredible edit and storytelling and this very elaborate, hard to plan thing, and you know, you get all of that done, and he's like, yeah, but my highest views by far are the I'm just flying in the pattern with a camera on my head.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing.
Yeah. I mean, when I was training, that's all I wanted. I wanted the immersive, like, there were points where I was like, I just want to know before I started flying, you know, when I was watching content online before I actually started flying in airplanes, I wanted to know, like, what does it smell like in the plane? Like, what do the controls feel like? Like, I just wanted as much, as close as I could get to being in there, is all I wanted to see. And then it's funny, after you get that all under your belt, it's like, well, now I want to see people making cool stuff. Like, I want to go see all the other cool stuff. But, it's wild. I was the same way. I can appreciate why that's his, especially him. Cause I watched a lot of his stuff during training because he's a good trainer, and it was, a lot of it was the kind of content that I wanted. Like, procedural stuff and like how he's doing things. And like, he talks through it. I think that's where some of my instinct of talking all the time through my stuff came in, because he did that. It, you know, everything was verbal with him in the plane by himself. And I just really appreciated that. When I was learning to fly.
My entry point into aviation YouTube was when I couldn't figure out how to land. Oh, ironically, we're back to this. when I was a student and couldn't figure out how to land, and I thought, oh, I can get a lot more time on final if I just watch videos. And yeah, it's not as good as the real thing, but you 8 times in an hour, you see final. I can do more than that, just supplementing that. And
you know, one of my most popular videos was in a similar vein. There were two that always blew my mind at how crazy it was, because neither of them were anywhere near the ones that I put the most energy in or like the most compelling from a filmmaking standpoint. One of them was a video I called Tips About Trim. That's where I talked about, I called it, it's cruise control. This is how Tyler, my instructor, used to say to me, like, people always get this impression that like you're trimming for some kind of attitude or whatever, and he's like, you're trimming for an airspeed. And one of the biggest kind of revelations to me, and then after I became a private, I went out and did a video on this where it was like, I said, like, okay, so like I've taken off and now I'm in cruise or in climb, and I want to climb at 80 miles an hour, and I'm going to set this trim wheel and where my hands are off and I'm at 80 miles an hour, and I would say, okay, now we're a cruise, you know, and I'm going to trim for level flight here, and I'm at a airspeed of 100 miles an hour. And I said, now I would say, like, what do you think's going to happen when I pull the power back? What's my speed going to do? It's going to stay exactly the same. I'm going to descend at 100 miles an hour. That was earth shattering to me when I realized, if you trim at every phase of flight for an airspeed, that's exactly what you're doing. This is not a pitch control mechanism. It's a speed control mechanism, right? Yeah. And so that video was my second most popular video ever that I made. And it was thanks to my instructor, Tyler, who really laid that foundation for me. And that I use trim. I trim in every, like, there's not a change that I make where I have not done something with the trim wheel. Now, One Dog Geek, thank you. Yeah, I said that trim video was really helpful when you were a student pilot. Yeah, trim was a huge thing. That was one. The other one was, I did a video on how I use early on in ForeFlight, like right after I became a private. It was a how do I use ForeFlight as a private pilot, just a non-instrument private pilot. And I just sat in the hangar at 5-2 Lima and kind of went through, like, here's how I use it for planning, and here's what I do for this and that. And that was another one that was hugely, again, super easy. It was one camera locked down on a tripod and a screen recording of my iPad that I cut together and kind of narrated the stuff. But those were the two most popular, still to this day, on my channel, were those two videos that really were no exciting flying. They were just kind of, but when I was a student, that's what I wanted.
Yeah. What's the video you're most proud of, though, or that means the most to you? Like, you're kind of, part of it is you're making it for that, right?
Those are the ones that my daughter is in. Like, I think the trip to the Outer Banks with her, where she shot a bunch of footage on her iPhone, we were landing at Currituck at sunset. Some of those trips, I mean, the trips with my daughter are the most memorable, just flights to me. And I think those videos are probably the most meaningful. I mean, the ones that when I go back to watch some of my own content, those are generally the ones I go to first, are the ones that she's in with me. And the ones where I was letting her fly, you know, towards the end, you know, the last few times she flew, where we were actually switching seats for a while. I was letting her sit in the left seat and I was flying right seat, and I was letting her do a lot more of the actual flying. And those were super fun, to make. In the Nashville trip, you know, I mean, the stuff that we got to do as a group, I mean, those things, like the flying at the Outer Banks, the flying at the Nashville, those were, just because they're such good personal memories, like, you know, those are the things that I want to remember the most of that we've done. And I think those are probably the ones I'm proudest of. I may think of another one later, but the training ones were easy and long and boring. But when I was a student, that's what I wanted. That's why I made them. Yeah. You know, I was doing them for me initially, and then I kept getting feedback from others who are like, these are great. And I'm like, well, they're helping me too, because that makes me go rewatch all my lessons again as I'm working through them. And there were so many times when I was editing them, I was like, look what just happened here. You know, like, and things would just click from getting to watch them again. That's why I always encourage people, like, even if you have one single GoPro, put it in your plane every single lesson you take, even just to watch the footage again for yourself, especially early on, like in the early lessons where things like you're not going to remember. Things are hitting you so fast in the airplane. When you get the chance to slow down, when your life isn't in danger and you can just watch the stuff again, you can learn so much from rewatching your flights.
But audio is key to that, because that's, I think there's more lessons on the audio side than the visual side, which is the CFI that says 12 things to you when you're on final and your brain is already overloaded and you hear that again, or that call from tower that you didn't realize. You're like, why were they so upset by my response? And you listen to it again. You're like, oh, because I didn't, they were talking about a different plane and I answered, you know, or whatever the case is.
Right. Yep. No, audio is very important too. And it's easy anymore. I mean, things are so easy with a GoPro and a cable that you can buy pre-made. Like this stuff, they've made it so easy now.
Yeah. As one Dill Geek says, he says, I record every one of my flights. There's still stuff I miss in the airplane that I see when reviewing the video. I record 95% of my flights still. And I know that's kind of opposite of Brian, who's like, oh, I have footage and then I throw it away. And it's like, my thing is like, I keep all of that. And yeah, you know.
I've had a tough time because, I've only put cameras in maybe 5 or 10% of the time over the last year. And of that, even if I'm on a long trip, like I just did this whole thing where it was actually kind of critical to this larger project that I'm working on, that I just get the takeoff and the landing of where I'm going. That's really all I got. And I just totally forgot. I filmed the takeoff and then turned them off, flew for a couple of hours, whatever, and then went to go turn them, or, you know, should have gone to turn them back on and just did not. And I did it. And I was like, idiot, you know, while I was like, well, you know, well, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, well, that's fine, but just make sure you get this next stop or whatever. And then it was like, totally forgot.
Yep.
Again. And so I've really got to get back into that. It's, I think,
I have a suggestion too. And this is something I'm consciously, this is like, I'm already making New Year's resolutions for 2024. Here's something I'm terrible about. And I even thought about it this weekend when I flew, because it's so almost infrequent anymore that I'm flying. I get so mad. I don't know why I don't take some stills on my iPhone every flight, because those of you who are using 4Flight or Garmin Pilot for your logbook, I mean, I love the flights that I can go back in my logbook and see where I took pictures and remember things about those flights from the photos that you attach to them. I mean, it is so easy. I know, like, it makes me so mad on social media sometimes. I'll see on some of these Facebook groups or like, somebody's on even a student on their solo cross country and in cruise, they took a picture of themselves and all the old guys are like, put your phone away, fly the plane. I'm like, dude, it took him 0.4 of a second to take his selfie in his plane. Get off yourself. But I just think that like having photos from some of your flights are like, I wish I had more of those in my logbook now to go back and kind of review and remember these flights by. So one of the things I'm going to try every single flight that I take now is to at least take a picture or two so that I can attach it to the logbook entry and remember it.
Yeah, I've been pretty good about that part of it, and just or just having like a GoPro that's just loose and not attached to anything and just capturing a couple of quick views or something. So it's definitely for me, as far as video making or whatever, I think it's been sort of a good thing to not have so much footage, because then it's really the impetus is on sort of whatever it frees me up in a way to not be so real-time documentary about it and more narrative driven, you know, for a lot of things. So, but I'm always kind of, I don't have a massive audience to sort of disappoint, you know, like I was sort of talking with Josh about that. You know, it's like, do you have things that you want to do that you just kind of can't, because, you know, you have sponsors and responsibilities and a sort of a thing, you know, like I can make reckless, weird turns in my creating and it doesn't hurt anybody or matter. But for somebody like that, it's different. It's been fun to get away from all the real time capture of everything, but then still find ways to work with story in those constructs or confines. But, yeah. So Ted, You just sent me a note privately that said something along the lines of,
let me do some housekeeping.
It's private for a reason. It's private for a reason.
Does it say STFU? What does STFU mean? No,
ask the kids around you. Yeah.
No, you didn't type that, that's basically what it said. So so let's make
Ben. Ben is Juliet Echo Foxtrot said, he's on the wrong side. He's over in the YouTube comments. Without Ben here, one of us has got to be the adult in the room and you know, take care of the housekeeping.
Yeah. By the way, he's watching us like sort of our, like, kind of, he's like the grandfather sipping whiskey in the corner, just like being these stupid kids, you know, like that's,
yeah,
I see him. He's here.
He's in the green room.
I see him. Yeah. He's in the green room. Oh, there he is.
Oh, hey, Ben.
Hello, Chris. It's really good to see you.
Good to see you. You want me to step out now so you can?
Not at all. I think maybe I'd rather Brian step out if anybody does.
Did you see his white claw?
I did. That's I had to come in and comment. He said it was an Airbus guy that left it there, but I'm sure he was downtown bachelorette party or something, and there's probably a six pack laying around, and he just swiped it.
It was karaoke. Just, you know, it was just in my Uber.
Yeah.
No, but I think Ted still should do the housekeeping.
All right,
and definitely not White Claw here.
I see we're still at Information Whiskey. So we broadcast live on YouTube every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, and that's at youtube.com/@midlifepilotpodcast. The live chat is open for questions and comments. We really do it for the audio-only version that podcast is on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever else podcasts are found. Make sure to subscribe and leave a 5-star review. They can only be 5 stars. It'll actually reject it if you do any less. We love getting feedback and your suggestions. You can email us at midlifepilotpodcast@gmail.com. We have a very active Discord community. In fact, thanks Wendell Geek, who has really helped us understand what Discord is. And, if you're interested, we may chat about that at some point. But if you're a listener and you don't know what it is, just drop us an email at midlifepilotpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll give you an invite to Discord and come in and say hi, see pictures, and see what else the weird stuff we're chatting about is. We've opened a merch store. Ben's wearing a hat. I'm wearing a polo. Sorry, but... anybody else wearing merch, or just the two of us?
Chris? I was waiting my care package. I never got. So,
Chris will not support the podcast. We know this. Yeah. So
he's like, support the podcast. I invented the podcast.
We need to support him.
So we've got,
be careful what you ask for, Chris.
Yeah. Right.
We've got t-shirts in various shapes. We've got hats, stickers, and more, including polo shirts and tumblers. And that is at store.midlifepilotpodcast.com. That helps us keep the lights on for this podcast, and at some point might break even on it. And, you know, that's a wild success.
Yep. Let me know when you get there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there was a comment that, podcast review that popped up a few days ago that Brian
pointed out. Can I read this one?
Yeah, you have it loaded?
I just want to jump here and say, I think it's important that Chris be on this podcast to hear this review, because he really encapsulated how I felt when I listened in on episode 1 or 2, it was with the two of you, and you're the biggest part of it, Chris. And so I thought it was just in fitting that Brian read this while you're here.
Yeah. Chris, you are the larger, you're no.
Well, I see.
We're doing wing balance on the podcast. Yeah.
So no, I'll say, when I saw this come in, I thought, you know what, it's so nice when you get feedback that is just absolutely on the nose of exactly what you've been trying to do or hoping to accomplish the whole time. So I'll just read it. So this is from, CCC Gould. Subject line for this review says, first pilot friend. I found this podcast a few months ago when I started really thinking about getting a PPL and even possibly career switching down the road. Having no background in aviation and no friends with PPLs, this podcast is a much needed friend that gives me guidance and encouragement in this journey. I just started taking lessons and I'm loving every minute of it. I'm especially grateful for your episode about how to get started, as it gave me the confidence to own my training and to find a CFI that works for me. So thanks so much for being my first pilot friend, which I think is just really, that's like, in the very early stages for me, I've said this many times, I didn't have any pilot peer group whatsoever. And that was really a lot of my motivation to get involved and try to push this along, because I, you know, I didn't have nobody around, nobody to talk to, nobody call, nothing. And so for him to say first pilot friend, and we can be that on any level and some by proxy means or otherwise, is huge. So, it's awesome.
That's awesome. Yep.
I think Brian, you learned during COVID too, right? You started flying during COVID, or you start before
21. That? So kind of, I basically, what I did was as soon as the vaccine was available.
Yeah.
And then back then it was like, if you get, you know, 2 weeks after, then, you know, and
you're good.
I scheduled my medical and then my first lesson to be 2 weeks after my first vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my experience too, of doing it during COVID. We're still wearing masks some of the time, you know, depending on risk and everything else. And, but we're the only people at the airport. It was also winter, which Northwest, but the only person I really knew was my CFI. I didn't know other CFIs, didn't know anybody else at the airport. I know people that were in aviation 20 years ago. They're not around, or not around at all anymore. And so I had nobody to really talk to about that. And, you know, and then the only other people you see are, you know, like, Sam, Evan's, pilot son, Sam, you know, there's like, you're 18, you're on the career track, and it's a completely different part of aviation than we're in.
Yeah, those guys are like, I don't have time to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm like, let's talk about your feelings. How did you feel when you were trying to land? They're like, what do you mean? I landed. I
feel like I'm going broke.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we're not CFIs. We're not trying to do the how-to podcast. There's a lot of those out there. Sometimes we accidentally verge into that territory, but we're here to share experiences, and hopefully we're not.
It's kind of the aviation anonymous group. I mean, we're a support group, it feels like, and I'm proud of that. But I have a question for Chris, and one Dull Geek has a question for Chris, and I wanted to add to it. We have another meetup. Are you going to be able to join us, or would you join us?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are my favorites. I mean, those have been my favorite experiences. Yeah, for absolutely.
Well, yeah, we were talking.
Oh my God. Hey, how crazy is this? So I had this big idea. I'll tell the greater community now. This was kind of a little idea, and then it kind of got into our Discord, and I was like, dudes, this was for last October. Do you guys remember? I was like, dudes, let's go to Vegas. Let's all fly to Las Vegas commercially and then go rent planes in Vegas and go fly around. And then I think, Michael Young was
Michael
like,
Young.
Michael, like, let's go for Formula One weekend. And I'm like, well, do you think I have $1 million? I mean, I'm not going for a Formula One race. Are you out of your mind? Vegas Tober, One Dog Geek said that was kind of our hashtag, Vegas Tober. Well, that thing fell apart. And then I was like, I have an idea. We all talked and said, let's meet up in Ohio somewhere. And then we didn't do it. Or maybe you did without me.
We talked about it. And, accommodations were not as easy to do. So, Brian and Chris and Ted and I were talking, maybe we'll just do another Nashville meetup.
Sure.
It's got an appeal to spouses, and, you know, you can bring, you know, whoever, maybe set up a home base at the same Airbnb. There's actually the building next to it was also an Airbnb, but if we get a big enough group, they can go get hotel rooms and we just hang out at the Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. So maybe try to do something in the spring.
Yeah, man.
I just thought about it, and I thought, well, what would be the easiest for me? No, it's not what I thought.
Well, that's always what it's about. No, no. It's okay.
Well, What I thought was, what is in sort of the middle-ish of the country that gives, you know, the more adventurous West Coasters a fighting chance to join, if anything, just less of a commercial ride to get here.
Yeah.
And then for those that do commercial, but then want to actually do some of the flying, two things. One is we found that everybody having their own plane is not the best thing. But on the flip side, there are a lot of places to rent aircraft around here. So you can kind of get a little bit of both, whether you want to or not. So there's all that. There's plenty of, it's a, like Ben said, it's a destination. It's not a hard sell to get your family to come, and then you do nerd pilot stuff and they go have actual fun or whatever. There's a nice way to sort of split that up or be a part of it or whatever. So I think that we're starting to move towards a spring 24, Nashville midlife pilot, community fly in.
I like it.
And set up to John Tomb because it's like, it's in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? It's not, but you have all the resources you have.
And it's going to be sponsored by White Claw.
Yeah, I think it already is. And I think, Kid Rock's jets up there, and I'm pretty sure these are just strewn all about, at the foot of his jet.
Ben, that's when we were leaving, weren't we?
Yes.
We were just waiting to take off, literally to head back to Atlanta, and his jet came in. It's really easy to recognize because of the middle finger. And
right. Yeah. I'm painting on the tone. I have another question for Chris. Last I heard, I knew Celia's in school, college, mm-hmm. but was there any movement on her taking flying lessons?
So we started that process barely before. Do you guys remember on... she made her way into one of my videos. Oh, that was a great one too. My biennial flight review with Victoria.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Victoria was a flight instructor in our club, and we ended up in IMC on our VFR flight review and had to fly and approach de minimis at Fairmont to get back to Fairmont, which was legendary. I got to log some actual. I guess I can say this. She ended up leaving here and is doing some, she went the air traffic control route and she got placed somewhere and is doing her ATC stuff. And, then Cecilia went to WVU. She moved in. She's living on campus in Morgantown. And so, that kind of slowed down the process of that for now. The interest is still there. Just a matter of timing. It's got to figure out how school works, but she's doing great. And, it may be a thing that we can work in, while she's in school. So she's not done any training yet.
Is this her second year in college or first year?
It's her first semester. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
First semester. She's home for break. You know, WVU, for those of you geography, like Fairmont to Morgantown, where WVU is, it's about an 18-minute car ride. So she's like, but she's at our house this week for Thanksgiving.
So we're similar. Yeah. Yeah. So my middle one is at Georgia Tech, which is, it's actually about a 30-minute drive. So, but we do have all three boys. That's why I wasn't able to join. That was the original plan was to be elsewhere, but I had all three boys home tonight. We're all eating dinner together. It doesn't happen very often. So
that's great.
All you got to do is have a washer and dryer, right?
Yeah.
Industrial strength.
So now before we get out of here, Ted, didn't we have a clandestine bag of words that we were going to throw out?
Oh, we do. I actually forgot about that. So, Chris, we started doing this bag of words when we have people that send it in to midlifepilotpodcast@gmail.com. And we have one that's coming up. I thought that I'd look through, your first five flights and see what I could find in there. So the problem is that, Chris basically, he just sounds like a radio announcer. It sounds like he's done this his entire life. So I didn't actually find one that was a great bag of words, but, I think that this is in the same spirit of it. So here we go.
I don't see him, and he does not have ADS-B.
That's all right.
That's got to be him. There's a plane moving, is it? I think so. There's a plane moving right to left, down 23 right now. Oh, wait, that's the interstate. Yeah, that's the interstate. It was a semi-truck, not an airplane.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on. I got to edit that out.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, I watched all five of your first episodes.
Oh, my God. Because
I had to find something that, you know, that was fun.
Can you play it again, please?
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Let's please.
I don't see him, and he does not have ADSB.
That's all right.
That's got to be him. There's a flame moving, isn't it? I think so. There's a plane moving right to left, down 23 right now. Oh, wait, that's the interstate. Yeah, that's the interstate. It was a semi-truck, not an airplane.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on. I got to edit that out.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. I'm surprised you didn't find the one. I got made fun of so much in retrospect. There was a video. I was so mad. I went on multiple tangents. I couldn't believe that ADS-B wasn't mandatory for every aircraft in the National Airspace System. I still am mad about it, truthfully. And I don't want to hear about airplanes without electric systems. Don't give me any of that. But anyway, I was so mad. And there was one video where this was before ADS-B was mandated in 2020. So like back in 2018 or something, I said, I can't wait till 2020.
Yep.
Because
I heard that
the ADS-B mandate was coming for where it was going to be. And somebody later, after COVID hit in 2020, I got a comment on that video. Somebody commented and said, that seems kind of misplaced now, doesn't it? You know, the whole world was shut down, and I'm like, oh, dang, man, that's not what I meant.
No, and man, I love having ADS-B. It's like, I mean, of course, the ones I'm concerned about are the ones that don't show up on there. Yeah. You know, it's the planes you don't see that you're scared about, but it is so nice for that situational awareness where you're like, okay, 6 miles that way. Okay, I can see them, and yeah.
Hey, by the way, did you guys know that you can support this podcast for 25 cents an episode? Chris,
Has really got commercial since I left.
Have you noticed how like we've kind of gotten pretty Sally Struthers about this whole thing?
Yeah, man. You need me to read anything? You got a cue card?
APTA. Start crying.
Here's my can. Shake my can.
For only 4 White Claws a year, you can support the podcast.
All right, Ben, get us out of here.
Okay. Chris, thanks for letting me crash the party.
Yeah, thanks
really
for
awesome
having
to
me.
See you. Absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate you guys. So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We're broadcasting every Tuesday at 8, usually. That's the plan. Next week, I'm not sure what we got in the pipeline, but I'm sure we have some fun stuff. Support us at on Spotify, as Brian said. It's the store.midlifepilotpodcast.com. Get your merch there. And send us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. There's a couple others. Maybe we'll hit them up on the next episode. Some really nice feedback. So signing off episode 50. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time.